they're taking each experiment through a methodical process. So that's how I view business. It's that every business venture is an experiment. It is a test, and going through these experiments allow you to learn more about yourself, learn more about your passion and your interests, learn more about the world. And given just our sort of freedom to create in this country and the way, you know, capitalism works, you start to learn that the wealthiest people in the world don't just have one business venture. They have an enterprise, right? They have different industries that they're tapped into, different ways that they leverage their skill sets and monetize their genius. So I'm able to do that through my nonprofit entity, where we can create free and accessible education to early stage and underrepresented startup founders.
Welcome to another episode of Innovation Insights, where we dive deep into the minds shaping the future of industries through innovation, creativity, and groundbreaking research. We believe that innovation happens in all aspects of life. I am your host, Dr. Yolanda Sanders. Today, we're excited to introduce a guest who is an award-winning startup founder and a nationally recognized ecosystem builder, Gary Johnson III. Gary is the founder and president of First Founders Incorporated. This 501c3 organization empowers early stage entrepreneurs by lowering barriers to entry and providing them with the tools to succeed. Yeah. His innovative work has impacted over 200 entrepreneurs globally, helping them raise more than $500,000 in non-dilutive funding. In addition to his work with First Founders, Gary is a fintech entrepreneur, a Delaware Business Times 40 Under 40 honoree, an HBCU VC, and Hinhatch Pitch Competition winner. He also serves as an adjunct entrepreneur professor at the University of Delaware, while also pursuing his MBA at Howard University. His passion for inclusion, innovation, and entrepreneurship extends beyond the classroom, as he advises teams in the National Science Foundation iCorps programs and mentors startups in prestigious accelerators like Backstage Capital and BH Ventures. Gary's leadership extends to Bison Venture Partners, where his team helps small businesses and startups thrive through strategic partnerships and access to capital. As an innovative activist, Gary's voice resonates in the op-ed space with thought-provoking pieces like "Delaware Business Community, You're Officially on Notice," reminding us that change is not just necessary, it is inevitable. So join us as we dive into Gary's journey, explore his vision for a more equitable innovation economy, and discover how he's shaping the future of entrepreneurship. So let's get started. Gary, welcome to Innovation Insights. So happy to have you here.
Thank you, Yolanda. I am excited to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Well, I just came across you via social media. Someone that I'm connected with had liked one of your posts, and it came up on my feed, and I was just intrigued by everything that you're doing. So I did a little research, and we featured you as one of our innovators of the week. And I'm sure you're probably like, who is this person? Why is she doing this? But thank you for connecting and responding and sharing your story with us today.
Of course. Yeah. I am grateful for the recognition, and we appreciate it. And yeah, we're just excited, you know, anytime that somebody sees what we're doing and sees the value in it. So we appreciate it. And it was a surprise. So thank you.
You're welcome. Tell us a little bit about your background and about your journey into entrepreneurship. Were you always an entrepreneur? Did you just come out the womb as an entrepreneur? Some people do.
I know. It's funny. I do not have the same story as a lot of other entrepreneurs that grew up selling candy out of their locker or something like that. But get this entrepreneurial gene from my mother, who has been an entrepreneur as long as I've known her. And growing up, she always had a hustle. She was a single mother, just working to make sure that she could provide for her family, right? So it wasn't until middle school where I got to really see her as a business owner and understand what that was. But she started a property cleanouts business where she hired myself and my two younger siblings as her first employees. And every weekend we would get in this rented U-Haul truck and we would drive around our neighborhood and greater Philadelphia. And we would go and do property cleanouts from morning into the late afternoon. And we would scrub the bottom of the floor to the top of the ceiling. And it was hard work. It was nothing luxurious, nothing pretty, but it was entrepreneurship. And I saw leadership in my mom. I saw her hiring people in the community. I saw her just working really hard, again, just to provide for her family. But it wasn't until I got to college where I actually decided to study entrepreneurship and learn that's what she was doing. She was solving a problem in the community and creating value in a unique way.
I am so sure she is proud of you for carrying on the entrepreneurship gene and juggling multiple ventures. Would you talk to us about the multiple ventures that you are handling? And the one that caught my attention first as a coffee lover was Bison Adventures and the coffee line that you have.
Yeah. So I get the serial entrepreneurship from my mom because she's always got something, right? It's always something, whether it's the property cleanouts, whether it's real estate, or she has a daycare, an in-home daycare that's going very well. I learned from her that you don't need to box yourself into any one particular thing. And from my dad, I get leadership and management skills. And I'm, because of him, a man of stature. I'm a very tall man. So that is actually a benefit in the business world, as I've come to find out. But I am a serial entrepreneur because I'm a creative, right? We're all creative individuals. We do come out of the womb as potential innovators, right? We create every day. We play every day as kids. And the most successful entrepreneurs are people that understand that play is what leads to innovation. So they lean into that sort of childlike behavior of experimentation and testing and not being afraid to fail. At the University of Delaware is where I actually started to study creativity. And I started to learn about how you can apply the scientific method to entrepreneurship. And a scientist is running multiple experiments at once, but they're taking each experiment through a methodical process. So that's how I view business, that every business venture is an experiment. It is a test. And going through these experiments allow you to learn more about yourself, learn more about your passion and your interests, learn more about the world. And given just our sort of freedom to create in this country and the way, capitalism works, you start to learn that the wealthiest people in the world don't just have one business venture. They have an enterprise, right? They have different industries that they're tapped into, different ways that they leverage their skill sets and monetize their genius. So I'm able to do that through my nonprofit entity, where we can create free and accessible education to early stage and underrepresented startup founders. Through my for-profit consulting firm, Bison Venture Partners, we're able to work with and collaborate with venture capitalists, angel investors, other resource providers in our startup ecosystem to provide more resources to small business owners and technology startup founders, in addition to being able to invest in those same businesses so that as we support businesses in our community, it's not just about buying Black, it's about investing Black and having a vested interest in their growth, being along their journey to the point where we own equity in these same businesses. And we truly want to help them grow to the point where when they win, we win in multiple ways. And then the coffee venture is honestly a byproduct of all of that experimentation. It's just been something where along this journey for myself, my longer term goal has always been, you know what, when I retire, I would love to open like a cafe that's for the community and just is like a co-working space. That's all chill vibes and I can just relax and listen to music and serve good drinks all day long. Now I'm very far away from retirement. Obviously have a coffee business now. And it's not because I decided one day, you know what, I want to sell coffee. It was, I wanted to learn how to use different tools so that I could help other entrepreneurs leverage those tools to build their own businesses. And in doing so, just that testing and experimentation, I figured out a way to sell coffee. I learned more about the industry and how to source beans from around the world and how to build an e-commerce store. And even though my goal in testing out that platform was to build a marketplace for other entrepreneurs, I decided to put up our own product of BVP Coffee. And then slowly but surely, people started to know that I sold coffee and I would be invited places and I became the coffee guy. So it's something that has just opened up a whole new, you know, door of, and realm of opportunities for me and my enterprise. And it's been something we're just leaning into. And it's all the same mission, whether it's our for-profit ventures, our nonprofit ventures, e-commerce or consulting. It's all about empowering the people, investing in the people, and just through business, you can do that through multiple different ways.
Well, and that leads me to your part of the mission of your work is building financial models for the Black community. And you've already spoken quite a bit about community. You've used that word quite a bit. And how do we address having financial models and addressing historical gaps of access to capital for the Black community?
Yeah. One, the conversation, right? Starts with education to understand that we are at a deficit, right? We have a big problem in this country, right? We have a racial wealth gap that is only widening, and we can either sit back and complain about it, or we can do something about it. Just what entrepreneurs do, what politicians do as well, right? We all have different roles to play in this space. But one, acknowledging the problem and then strategizing on solutions. So the solution to reversing generations of inequity for me is to create equity. Creating equity to me is business ownership, right? So investing in small business owners and technology startup founders, right? The people who are going to go out and take the risk to create something that creates value for the world in different ways. Now, everybody is not going to be an entrepreneur. Everyone shouldn't be an entrepreneur because it is very difficult in many different ways, mentally, financially. It will test you in every realm possible. But in 2024, it's never been easier to start a business. What's important for me and part of my passion is just like helping our community understand that you can get started with testing your own ideas today. You don't have to feel like you need to have a bunch of money in your bank account, or you had to have gone to a certain school to start a business, or have certain networks. Really, everyone can start a business today for less than $100. If you have an idea, you have a dream, and you just want to do it, like you can do it today. You could even start it for free, to be honest with you. Part of it is the education around that. But then outside of investing in the entrepreneurs, it's also important for us to invest in our community as investors. So helping our community members understand that, hey, it may not be in your path to create a small business, but the way that we can all win is when you support local small businesses, Black-owned businesses, by shopping with them, but then also investing in them, like literally investing in them. Through my work, I talk a lot about investment crowdfunded, which is an opportunity for everyday people to own equity, to provide small loans to businesses of all types in our community who need access to capital to grow and scale. And when we invest in those businesses, when we own equity in those businesses, again, we have ownership, right? Which we don't have a lot of in this country, But these businesses, especially the ones that are able to leverage technology and are able to solve very big problems and meet the needs and demands of lots and lots of people across the country and potentially around the world, when they are successful, the people that invest in them are successful. I talk a lot about how there are people who invested in companies that are on the stock market today before they were on the stock market. So a lot of my work is around teaching more of us, more Black people, how do we invest early, right? How do we identify talented people in our community, the innovators who have a lot of potential, but who are going to need a lot of resources to turn these dreams into a reality and turn these businesses into enterprises. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, but it's education. And then it's helping our people understand how to make more money. Like for me, like I said, it is about teaching business owners how to scale up, how to refine their business models, how to leverage technology, how to collaborate, and then helping our everyday community members, the ones who are not going to take the risk of starting the business, but can take the risk of investing a small amount of money that they may have spent on a pair of shoes, right? Or maybe there was a trip they were going to take where it's like, hey, you can save up for that trip another time. Maybe we should all pull our funds into investing in this local manufacturing company. It's a Black-owned manufacturing company. And if we all invest in this, we own the means of production in our community, right? Like that's true ownership. All of our work revolves around that. So it is a lot, but it is about helping people in the community understand how they can get started. Like what is their role that they can play? And how do we make those roles more accessible? How do we make that entry point more accessible for everyone?
Oh, thank you. So important, having that capital to start the business or to scale it, at least. As mentioned, it is much easier today to start a business in 2024. And you work a lot with early stage entrepreneurs. Will you tell us a little bit about that and how you work with entrepreneurs that are just starting?
Yeah. There's a lot of different ways that we support them. And it's really all of the same sort of topic that I'll speak to over and over again, right? It's like nothing necessarily innovative about what we've found that small businesses and startups need, right? They need resources. They need access to capital to build their businesses and to grow their businesses. They need access to networks, right? They need mentors. They need expert guidance. They need people who've been there, done that, who can help them make this journey just a little bit easier, right? In regards to avoiding certain pitfalls and traps, understanding the industries that they're working in, right? Developing key partnerships, access to advocates, right? People that are going to champion them in the community, people who are going to be out there spreading the word about what they're up to and why their products or services are valuable to the community. They need so many other things. They need access to space. They need community of entrepreneurs, right? They need people who understand the challenges that they're going through and can just sort of, you know, on occasion, just be there for them, allow them to vent, right? Because there's not a lot of people who can understand what they're going through. Right. Because again, not everyone's going to be an entrepreneur. And when you are an entrepreneur, you learn that there is no real training for this. Yeah, you can get an MBA, but an MBA is not in entrepreneurship. An MBA is in how to operate and manage an existing corporation with systems in place that are set and defined. Whereas entrepreneurship every day is something new and you just have to adapt and adjust and you're going to fail all the time. And that failure can build up, right? And you need people in your world that are going to be behind you and lift you up and hold you up and tell you it's going to be okay and you can do this. And this is just a part of the process, right? There's not a single entrepreneur who will tell you they didn't have challenges, they didn't have failures, and it never really ends until you close the business. So you need all of those people in your orbit. We do a lot of different things. So we provide mentorship, like one-on-one mentorship. So meeting with founders, right? Just asking them, hey, what's your biggest challenge right now? And they will tell us and we will say, you know what? here's our advice, here's our recommendation. And the recommendations are always based on our own experiences. It's not textbook knowledge necessarily that we're giving, since we're entrepreneurs ourselves. It's, hey, this, here's what I would do if I were on your team, right? Here's what I've done in my business and how it worked for me, or here's what I would not do. Please make sure you don't do this. I don't know what to tell you to do right now, but don't do this because I tried it and it will ruin your business. We also organize business pitch competitions. So we create opportunities for small businesses and startups to present themselves to the community, all right, and compete for non-dilutive capital, whether it's a couple $100s or a few $1,000s. Not only do these platforms allow the businesses to get new eyes on what they're doing, but then again, they get that money that they're able to take and invest in their growth, do whatever they need to do. They may need to just pay their rent for the month, right? Making it a little bit easier for these startup founders to just keep going. Some other things that we do. So there are founders who may want to raise money from investors. So we help them understand all the different types of capital that are out there and what might be best for them. And if raising a, what we call a community round, doing an investment crowdfunding campaign is right for them, that's something we've done ourselves, where we actually raised a little bit over $50,000 from 167 investors. And since we went through that process, we can teach other people how to do it for themselves. And we can tell them, hey, here's what worked for us. Here's what didn't work for us. We didn't do it the right way, quote unquote. So here's what you may want to consider when you do it for yourself. And then in addition to that, if they want to raise larger sums of money from venture capitalists, helping them understand the venture capital ecosystem and what VCs are out there that align with their industry and the trajectory of their business and their goals. And then in certain cases, we can even connect them and refer them to certain investors. And just one example is there's a financial technology startup called Kitty Credit that teaches kids how to build credit through doing chores. And they went through one of my nonprofit programs and then ended up winning our business pitch competition. I think it was about $7,500 they won. And then as they continued to grow, they wanted to raise venture capital. So through our for-profit business, we connected them to a Black-owned venture capital firm that ended up investing $100,000 into their funding round. And our saying is pay me in equity. So that's why our for-profit entity is important, because through the for-profit, we have a stake in that investment. Even though we didn't make the investment ourselves, we are partners with that VC firm. If the Kitty Credit platform ends up making a financial return to the VC, we will benefit from that as well. That's an important part of our model. And then Kitty Credit from there ended up competing in a $1 million pitch competition, which they won more recently. So that is like the journey of, okay, like how do we find them early, find them where they are, help them get what they need today, and then just keep supporting as they continue to grow.
That is fantastic. That is fantastic. Gary, just please keep up this great work. You are truly making a difference. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And another aspect of your work that was exciting to me was your work in empowering historically Black colleges and universities. I grew up in Colorado, but my parents are from South Carolina, and they both attended South Carolina State University at different times. They ended up meeting in Colorado, but as a child, spent much time on that campus. And although I did not attend a HBCU myself, definitely am supportive of their mission and know the direct impact of them. So could you talk to your involvement with HBCUs and their role in innovation and entrepreneurship?
Yeah. I love HBCUs. And ironically, I didn't go to one for undergrad. I have family members that went to Lincoln University. So my understanding of HBCUs was limited to Lincoln for a long time. But it was a great school for them. I have a fond memory of seeing my aunt graduate from Lincoln, and it was a great time. But when it came time for me to pick a college when I was in high school, right, I didn't have advisors who educated me about HBCUs. No one was there saying, hey, here's what you should look into or anything like that. Anyway, I ended up going to a PWI. But at that PWI is where I got to understand what it means to be a Black person in this world, what it means to be a Black entrepreneur in a primarily white space. And even still being at that PWI, all of my ventures always revolved around the community and investing in the Black community. And it was really challenging for me to get resources and to convince people that what I was doing was worthwhile because they couldn't relate to the problems I was trying to solve. It was really frustrating, but in going through that journey, I would take advantage of every resource available to me at the university and outside of it. There came a point in time where there was a pitch competition being held at Prairie View A&M in Texas. And I applied, not even really thinking that I was going to get accepted, but I got accepted, made it to the finals, and my university paid for my flight and my hotel to go out there and compete in this pitch competition. So they were super supportive of me throughout my whole journey. But that was my first time being at an HBCU in the innovation space. In Prairie View A&M, their mascot is a panther. So like I'm seeing like statues and monuments of like these panthers, like literal Black Panthers. And I'm like, man, this is the same time when Black Panther, the movie, came out. So this is like a lot. This is so Black and so proud. And I loved it. And I went out there and I was pitching a concept. I was building a tech platform to teach a variety of different skills to the Black community. And all the instructors on the platform would be Black people who were successful in their own spaces. And what was really cool about it was just, it was like a Shark Tank style event. The judges were people who I had been researching and studying and admiring, Arlen Hamilton being one, the founder of Backstage Capital, which invests in underrepresented entrepreneurs. And I was able to pitch my business. And then the conclusion of it was Arlen Hamilton announced me as the winner. And it was a really affirming moment for me that these are my people. I'm in the right space. Like, I'm not crazy. Yes, we do need this. It was the first time I pitched my business where I was pitching to us, and I didn't need to convince people that the problem exists. Like, they were like, yes, obviously your solution must exist because we all have this problem. So I really value HBCUs because they gave me a shot when, to be honest, I was like, I don't think I should be here. I thought this was for HBCU entrepreneurs only. So I'm grateful for that. And ever since that, I've just continued along. I've been like, that's all I needed to know. All I needed to know was, yes, I need to just keep going. I ended up getting my master's in entrepreneurship and design from the University of Delaware as well. But then even after that, decided to go back to school. And during the pandemic and all that we experienced with the Black Lives Matter movement, I had applied to Howard to get my MBA. And it was, it was the only university I applied to. I said, you know what? I don't even really want an MBA, but if I'm going to get one, it has to be from Howard. So I applied, I got in. And as soon as I got that acceptance letter, I said, oh, they do not know what they just did, because this is a dream come true. And then I'm all about community. Just was like, listen, I'm hitting the ground running at orientation. I'm recruiting people to build a business. And that's how Bison Venture Partners got started. And it's just about us coming together as a collective, have an impact that we want to see in the world today, not feeling like you have to wait until the future. You don't have to wait until you graduate. You don't have to wait until you've built up your savings to start investing in Black entrepreneurs and the Black communities. What can we do today? So there's an African proverb that says, if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. So Bison Venture Partners is literally built on that. And it's not about just a Howard thing, although the Howard legacy is fueling us. The historical greats that have come out of that university are just, you know, unparalleled. Our Twitter username is Bison VP, and think that's our Instagram as well, Instagram handle. So at the same time, Vice President Kamala Harris is serving in the White House, who is literally a Bison VP, right? So it's like all these stars are aligning and it's just feeling like we're in the right time, we're in the right moment. In enrolling at Howard, like then we actually start to get this HBCU experience and we start to see the disparities that exist in higher education. Man, like, why don't we have all of, like, where are the entrepreneurial resources at Howard? Why does this building look like this? Like, why is the endowment so much smaller than this other university I went to that, yeah, provided me with a bunch of resources, but it also provided me with a bunch of racist experiences. So what if our institutions actually had the resources they needed to invest in students who they truly believe in? So we see our business being something that allows us to invest in the sustainability and the growth of the HBCU ecosystem, because at the end of the day, money rules the world. So, hey, entrepreneurship is how we're able to generate that money. So can we build an enterprise that allows us to send more high schoolers to HBCUs, to advocate for HBCUs, to give them examples of Black people who come from where they come from, who go on to study business, build successful enterprises, and still have a social impact in their communities, regardless of what HBCU they decide to go to, right? So through our coffee business, we have a social impact component where we donate a dollar from every bag to HBCU scholarships. And we're having fun with it. We're building a brand and just leaning into Black culture and trying to do it for a community, because that's really all we have.
Yeah. Thank you for doing that and not only recognizing the disparity of resources for entrepreneurship at HBCUs, but taking the steps to help make changes there. And so you're extremely involved with higher education and you're teaching currently at the University of Delaware. What are some of the, I guess, inspiration, advice that you have for your students that you can also share with our audience?
I would say just get started, really, is the main thing. Believe in yourself. No one's going to believe in you until you believe in yourself. And the truth is that no one out here is any smarter than you or more capable than you. If you want to start your own business, you can do it. If you have an idea, like the only thing separating you from becoming an entrepreneur is just making that decision to get started. And you are not going to learn about what it takes to build this thing, to make it a success until you get started. There's no textbook, there's no guide that will walk you step by step, 0 to 100. Here's how you do all the things right, and then you'll be a millionaire, right? That's everybody, like everybody's goal getting started is, I just want to be a millionaire. It doesn't exist. So the best way to learn is by doing. And entrepreneurship just allows you to constantly experiment. I'm a big believer in lean startup methodologies, not spending a lot of money, not spending a lot of time and energy in building something out, but spending a lot of time and energy on rapid experimentation. So starting today, like whatever you can do, if it's just build a very simple, basic website and then share it with your friends, collect emails, like if that's the first step for you to get this thing out into the world and get some feedback, do that, right? If you have an idea for a product and all you have is a cardboard box, like how can you cut up this cardboard box and tape it together to make it look like the thing that's in your head? Taking those steps to just get started today. And then once you get started, it's very hard to go back. It's like, I'm in too deep now. Like the thing is in the world. I've shared it with someone. And then you really have an accountability system then, because now people know about what you're doing. And they want to keep up with you. They're like, hey, how is that thing going? Right? And you never want to let somebody else down. So you always show up by saying, I'm making progress. I'm continuing to show up. And I'm not making all the right decisions all the time, but I'm making decisions, right? I am taking action. I am not sitting back. I'm not complaining. I am just figuring it out as I go. So that is my biggest piece of advice, is to just get started. And know that all the people that you look up to, all the people that you think are the most successful people in the world, they just made a decision to get started, and they just kept going.
And you mentioned feedback and getting it out there and getting feedback. Would you talk a little bit more about the importance of feedback?
Yeah, the things that we create have to create value for others if we want to build a business. It doesn't create value for someone else. It's essentially a hobby, or it can be considered art, maybe. But if you want to build a business that allows you to generate revenue and build a community of customers, you have to make sure that you're solving a real problem and you're meeting the needs of the people in the world. Feedback is the gift that keeps on giving, because feedback is your potential customer telling you whether they like something or not, whether it helps them solve their problem or not, and how well it does that thing. Everybody has a job to be done, and you don't know how well you're doing your job unless you get that feedback. So that feedback comes in a lot of different forms. It can be ratings, it can be reviews, it can be a conversation as well. Just meeting one-on-one with someone who tries your product or your service, and you just want their unbiased, but it is biased. They should want it to help them. So you want them to tell you the truth about whether it truly helps them or not.
That makes sense. You have to know what your customers, your clientele wants. Yeah. I want to also circle back to another comment that you made. My background is in apparel and fashion and appearance. And have you use it as a communication tool? And so earlier in our conversation, you mentioned that being a tall person in business was helpful, and you realized this. Would you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. You want to make a great first impression, right? So I have the privilege of being tall, which just means that as soon as I walk in the room, everyone's, who is that? And I'm always, if we're not sitting down, I'm looking down on you. So I guess it's a little intimidating. But no, you want to present yourself in a way that allows you to stand out. I tend to show up in like an orange fedora in a lot of spaces that I'm in the business world. And it becomes your brand, right? Like, people know you for this thing. And what is the thing that you do? What is the thing that you're wearing that makes someone say, oh, like, you are an individual, but you are your own person, you are unique, I'm interested in learning more about you, right? And the way that you think, for whatever reason. So it's not that you have to be tall, right? Or you have to be the best dressed person, but it is about branding yourself and using, I think, clothing and fashion really like the best way to do that. So yeah, I don't know. I think that's all I have to say on that. But for me, I like, oh man, this is like something from the 80s. I like a nice retro look as well. But yeah, it is about being unique, being authentic as well. Authenticity is key. And I find that the people that I work with tend to be people that just don't go with the flow. They don't rely on status quo. They're individuals.
Yeah. Well, no, you stated that perfectly, because as people are building their own personal brand or their business brand or professional brand, appearance is an important part of that and what you're communicating. And you have found ways. I follow you on social media, and as soon as I see the fedora, I'm like, oh, there's Gary. And so, and it's memorable. It's very smart and strategic to think about making that visual statement too when you enter a room through your appearance. So thank you for talking a little bit more about that. Another thing I want to talk about too is technology and AI and ChatGPT, because I know that you have used this in some of your work, and people are either embracing it. Sometimes in academia, individuals are not quite sure what to do with it. In business, it has been very helpful for many people. So what are your thoughts, and how have you used AI in your work?
Yeah, I use AI a lot. We all use AI a lot, whether you know it or not, right? Whether you realize it or not, AI is in so many things. But yes, the more like ChatGPT, these chatbots and tools are becoming more mainstream now. I use those tools. I enjoy them. I do have like a love-hate relationship with them because there's a lot of bias in the systems, right? There's not a lot of us programming these models. So they don't know us and our culture and what we're looking for all the time. And then also the more I learn about it, there is a big environmental impact on AI usage as well, or with AI usage. So something to consider, something I'm considering. But ChatGPT has been super helpful for me in particular. I've used it to write a business plan. We participated in a business pitch competition in the spirits industry last year. And they were looking for innovations in spirits, like new products to the market. And I had this concept of a whiskey barrel aged cold brew cocktail, like ready to drink beverage, that I'd written it on a sticky note and put it on my bathroom mirror. And then one day I get an email from this entity called Pronghorn that exists to get more Black people in spirits industry as owners, employees, like the whole supply chain, trying to get more of us in the space. So they said, hey, we're looking for HBCU innovators to participate in this pitch competition. So I was like, oh, wow, like my concept would be perfect for this. Got the team together and had a very short amount of time to apply to this opportunity and just had so many other things going on already, right? It's like I could drop everything else and just focus on completing this application, but it takes real focus, real time. Like I have a lot of research to do on how this product can even become a real thing. So I use ChatGPT to take information about our coffee business and about our goals and ideas about this product. And I said, hey, here are the questions I need to answer to complete this application. Do this for me. Did that, submitted it. We ended up getting selected to be flown out to Miami and compete in the finals. And ChatGPT definitely helped get us there, right? We needed a concept, we needed a team, but ChatGPT helped us answer those questions about business model, potential distribution channels, all these technical things that like we just didn't know about the industry. So it got us to the stage. ChatGPT can help you get to the stage, but ChatGPT cannot pitch your business for you. ChatGPT cannot tell your story. It does not know the unique nuances about why we're doing this and how we're investing in HBCUs with our business and all this kind of stuff. We had to show up on stage with our cowboy hats and our custom gear and all this kind of stuff and tell the story, right, and give the pitch. But because of that alley-oop from ChatGPT, we were able to come home with $35,000. So we have used ChatGPT to win a pitch competition. I use it to write content in the tech space. If you have an e-commerce brand or any website, really, you need strong search engine optimization so that people find out about you as they're searching online for other things. So ChatGPT has been helpful in drafting blog posts and articles and things like that. I've used it to create artwork as well. So we'll use it as headers on certain posts, or certain social media posts we put out have been AI generated. And it helps you illustrate your ideas so quickly. Man, I could pay someone to do this, but most likely I won't pay someone to do this because I can't afford to pay someone. But with this either free tool or cheap tool, I can generate artwork that helps me paint the picture quite vividly. So we use it all the time. A lot of our descriptions on our products on our website are AI generated as well. And it can help you build consistency. I give it the parameters, like, hey, here's the product is teaching Black history. Here's the year. I want it to be like a Snapple fact. I don't want you to give the name of the university that this year is representing. I want it to be like a trivia question. ChatGPT can just pull it all together very quickly. And I'll be like, all right, so I'll do that with 100 more of our products. And it will just, it's a machine. So it can do those things very quickly. So for those types of tools or use cases, it is a great tool. I think there will be many more use cases that come. We'll even start to use it for consulting as we work with businesses, because we have our own ideas But these things are so smart, it's worth just checking and saying, hey, here's what I want to send as a proposal. Does this make sense given the scenario? And ChatGPT can tell you you're on the right track, but you could increase their efficiency even more if you consider XYZ. Like, oh, thanks, ChatGPT. That's great. So there's a lot of use cases there.
Oh, I agree. I use it with innovation insights all the time. And what's interesting is that the more I use it, the more it learns about me and the organization and with storing it in the history with all of my other chats with it. It just gets better and better. And when it first came out, I asked it to write a bio for me, just point blank, put my name in. Early 2023, it was bad. But now, if I ask it to write a bio for me, it knows who I am, what I've done. And just my tone and everything. And it's a great, sometimes you don't have like a real person to bounce ideas off of.
Exactly.
And ChatGPT. Yeah. But I always say thank you and please. And I'm very polite in case it takes over the world. Mm-hmm. I will have been the polite user.
That's right. That's right. It has a very short list of polite users.
Exactly. Oh, what are some other thoughts about the future of innovation and entrepreneurship? That do you have any other trends or things on the horizon that might help entrepreneurs?
I would say, as an investor myself, I'm reworking my investment thesis right now, and it is really around what I'll call like frontier technologies. So I want more of us building and innovating in ways that allow us to have true ownership, not just building on top of things. So an example is ChatGPT, for example. Like, what is the ChatGPT built by us, for us, that truly benefits our community, that the community owns? What are the technology businesses that allow us to innovate in industries that haven't seen innovation in a long time? So for our coffee business, for example, right now we partner with other roasteries to roast our beans and package our beans. But we want to grow into manufacturing ourselves. And part of that is actually building a clean manufacturing facility using air roasting technology, like state-of-the-art air roasting technology, which is more environmentally friendly, less wasteful, right? And more efficient. How do we do that? How do we incorporate, like, I'm an investor in this robotics company that it's a coffee robot, actually. So it's basically like a coffee kiosk, but it has this robotic arm that serves up drinks 24/7, right? Like, how do we use these technologies in our own communities to be the new cafes, right? How does our cafe be the most high-tech cafe you've ever seen? I want to see the engineers in our community building these innovations, these robots that are going to serve us. The infrastructure, right? What are the tools that other entrepreneurs can leverage? Right now we use Shopify. Shopify is not a Black-owned platform, right? What's the Black-owned Shopify that allows the next generation to pay for a subscription and build their own marketplace? That's what I'm thinking about. That, in addition to, yeah, just ownership across the board, just more representation in these spaces and less reliance on existing infrastructure.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Our last question that we ask every guest is, how do you define innovation?
It's tough for me, but I would define innovation as, I would say, the combination of seemingly disconnected things that create value for others. That's innovation to me. And like, I wrote a book called The Ghetto VC, which uses rap lyrics to teach startup investing to our community. Right? Like, to me, that's innovation. It's like taking two things that people wouldn't associate with each other, rap and venture capital, and combining them. That's innovation. So seemingly disconnected things, combine them to create value for other people.
Love it. Love it. I love that you included the value for other people. You are such a giving people person, and the community is so important to you. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We're so fortunate to have you. Thank you for being here with us today, sharing your story. I am sure that will invite you back, because your story is just begun. I know that you have so many more adventures ahead of you. It's just, thank you so much.
Thank you.
To our audience, thank you for joining us. And I hope that Gary's journey has reminded you that entrepreneurship is not just about individuals, but it's about I hope for our audience that you are inspired by Gary's journey, and that it reminds you that entrepreneurship is just not about individual success, but it's about creating pathways for others and creating a stronger and more equitable community. So please continue to follow us and subscribe to our channel and share it with others. Stay connected. And until our next episode, keep innovating, keep dreaming, and keep making a difference.